The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, a podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is Pumpkin Spice Jonathan Strickland.
This podcast is clear. Now, the question is, do you know what that's a reference to, Ariel?
No.
That's a reference. I changed it, but it's a reference to the original Poltergeist movie. All right. Yeah. Well, you know,
like
Ariel.
I've watched that all the way through.
Oh, it's so good. Well,
it's so scary.
Here's the thing, Ariel. I got a question for you.
Is it about Poltergeist? Because I'll fail that quiz.
It's not necessarily about Poltergeist. The question is, are there any Halloween movies that you know get a lot of love that you just don't connect with? We talked last week about Hocus Pocus and how both of us kind of, we missed the boat. Like, that movie came out at the wrong time during our, like, respective earlier lives that we didn't have that emotional connection. Are there any others that you're like, I could take it or leave it?
Yes, but mainly because I have left it thus far and haven't watched it, and that's A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Gosh, it's such a good movie.
And, you know, you might even argue that it's a Christmas movie, but I feel like it's a Halloween movie. And I don't know, it just doesn't, like, right now TikTok is full of everybody doing, like, their Nightmare Before Christmas cosplay, so Halloween for sure. It has never appealed to me.
I think, it's definitely it's very Tim Burton. So if you are not a big Tim Burton fan, then it's not going to connect with you. But it's got like that Tim Burton aesthetic in overdrive.
I was a Tim Burton fan during like Edward Scissorhands. I'm less a fan of like his claymation stuff, although I don't like hate it. It's just, I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm cranky about holidays trying to push into each other's holidays already.
Well, I mean, like it's a fun take on that. I think you would dig it if you were to give it a shot. But I also respect the fact that, you know, it just hasn't spoken to you. That's totally legit. Like, I know there are people out there who Princess Bride, like, it doesn't do anything for them. And while I think those people are monsters, you know, it's their prerogative.
I know for a fact that some of our listeners are not huge fans of The Princess Bride. We do not think you are monsters.
I mean, I do not.
I do not. I love you. Look, my stepdad is not a fan of Princess Bride either. Okay, so maybe I will give Nightmare Before Christmas a try this Halloween. If The Shining doesn't turn me off to Halloween movies for a year. What about you, Jonathan?
So there's this movie that I had not watched until this year called Trick or Treat. And it came out several years ago. It's a horror anthology movie. And all of the stories tie in with Halloween. It all takes place on Halloween night. And the stories kind of involve each other. Like stories cross in and out. You'll see something happen tangentially to one of the vignettes. And then in a later vignette, it becomes like front and center, and you're like, so that's what that was all about. And I know that it has a lot of kind of like cult status love. I watched it and I was like, I was just not terribly impressed. I've seen other Halloween anthology movies that I thought were better. This one just didn't quite work for me. But again, like I realize that a lot of folks, they think it's a fun Halloween film, and I do not begrudge them that. It just did not speak to me.
Is that the one with the kid who's got like either the scarecrow or the pumpkin head or something like that?
Both. He's got like a sack head spoiler alert. He's got like a sack head, and then when the sack is pulled away, he's got like a disformed pumpkin head type thing. He's kind of like the essence of Halloween, and if you don't follow the rules of Halloween, he's gonna get you.
I see. See, like in concept, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, and that's just one part of it. I mean, there are other stories. Like, there's a story about werewolves. There's a story about a psychopath who is behaving kind of like a vampire. There's a story about kids who want to go visit a quarry where some children supposedly died many years before. Like, there are all these different elements that tie in together, like I said. It just, and parts of it I thought were creepy, but parts of it I just found very off-putting or not effective. Also, it's a product of its time as well. Like, if they were to make a version of it today, it would probably, you know, maybe speak to me a little more.
I see. Is it super gory?
Parts of it are, yes.
Okay, then I will not watch that
one
either.
It is not Ariel rated.
All right.
But we're going to talk today about some news that's not so spooky, although one thing might fill you with a feeling to say boo, but not like a ghost. and that is that Disney has announced that it has pushed back the debut of several films. Like, all of the Marvel films got pushed back. Mm-hmm. At least a few months, and Indiana Jones 5 has been pushed back almost a full year to June of 2023. So, yeah.
So let's start with Indiana Jones, because while most of these, Disney is saying that most of the pushback is due to production. And, you know, we've talked about this with video games before, where if you can't put out a good product that isn't buggy, maybe you should wait on release. And I kind of feel the same way about big budget movies that use a lot of CGI. I would rather wait a little longer and get really amazing CGI than get something that gives me like super uncanny valley. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with that. But Indiana Jones actually is getting postponed because Harrison Ford hurt his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, he's up there, right? I mean, he's... Mm-hmm. He's a venerable gentleman, as they might say. He's old as heck, is another way of putting it. And
he's 79 years young.
Yeah. So, you know, these movies are pretty physically demanding, and I don't know what the details were of the injury, but yeah, he's going to have to take some time to heal for them. And of course, it's an Indiana Jones movie. There's only so much footage you can shoot that doesn't have Indiana Jones in it.
So you say it's because Harrison Ford is old that he hurt his shoulder. But listen, Jeremy Renner was filming Tag in Atlanta, part of which filmed like less than 2 miles from my house. And during one of the scenes, I think he broke like both arms. And so arm, shoulder, body injuries can happen in movies at any age if you aren't careful.
Didn't Harrison Ford last get injured when a door slightly closed on him during shooting Star Wars?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway, Disney has also, you know, talked about all these other things that have been pushed back. Like Doctor Strange has been pushed back. Black Panther sequel's been pushed back. Mm-hmm. Like, all these different projects have been pushed back. The Marvels have been pushed back. Now, at least with some of the films, I suspect...
Untitled 20th Century has been pushed back.
Yeah, there's a bunch of untitled ones that we don't know what they're going to be yet. Maybe Fantastic Four? Who's to say?
Untitled Disney live action. I'm guessing Hercules.
Yeah, I mean, that would track, right? Well, actually, maybe it'll be Hunchback of Notre Dame. But yeah, we're pretty sure that it's, one, it's production, and two... it may also be an attempt to try and feel out when the theater experience will be closer to what it was pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Because while we have seen some successes, they have only been a fraction of what a big success would be pre-pandemic.
Yeah, I was about to say, I know a lot of theaters are doing a lot of business renting out for private parties. I've got a few friends who have done that now. But I just can't imagine that it's near the same. I mean, there's still... operating at a decreased volume, even when they rent out a theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine that they're making the same kind of money back. I'm sorry, everybody. I have a cat from each side trying to like eat my desk.
Yeah, I'm actually watching as cats descend upon Ariel. It's making me sad that this is not a video podcast.
One of these days I will have Harvey and Walter White on camera for everybody. Harvey is trying to eat some fiery birdseed right now. I don't know what's up. Okay. So some of you might think that all of pushing all of these release dates for Disney back is tragic. But
I like the segue.
It's not as tragic as the infamous Scottish play.
Yeah, also known as Macbeth.
Macbeth.
Yeah, so we got a trailer, actually really more of a teaser, for an upcoming film of The Tragedy of Macbeth, starring Denzel Washington in the title role, and Frances McDormand as Lady Macbeth. That's intriguing casting, because if I were to cast Denzel Washington, I think I would probably cast him as Duncan as opposed to Macbeth.
Yeah, I think I would have cast him as Duncan as well, but I can totally see him as a Macbeth.
It's interesting because I don't associate him with like a conniving, ambitious, villainous character. So I'm actually very eager to see him play this part. I have no doubt he can do it. I absolutely think he could do it. I just don't associate him with that kind of character.
Well, from what I have heard, because this is actually this film, The Tragedy of Macbeth, came out at a film festival first, the 2021 New York Film Festival. It's done by Joel Coen, not with his brother, which is a first. But I think it's focusing on Macbeth and Lady Macbeth at a time when they are older than normally portrayed. And so I'm really interested to see how grizzled life experiences shape the dialogue.
Yeah. The teaser is very short, and you only have one line in it, but you have some really compelling visuals. It looks like it's going to be a creepy film, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Me too. Oh, also, it's in all black and white.
Yes, yes.
I'm excited about that too.
Something else we're looking forward to seeing, this is not a film, it is a sequel to a film, but it's actually going to be its own little series, is History of the World Part 2, a sequel to the Mel Brooks comedy from many years ago that had lots of tongue-in-cheek humor about history.
Yes, which seems right in line with current things going on. Mel Brooks is bringing his series to Hulu, and he's working with Nick Kroll and Wanda Sykes as some of the comedians, which is interesting because, I don't know, maybe it's just a generational thing because, like, Mel Brooks can get pretty blue, but Nick Kroll is, like, super blue.
Well, I mean, like, it's, to me, it's one of those things where it's bringing new voices into the writer's room, which I think is a good idea because, I mean, I love Mel Brooks. Okay. Mm-hmm. But his comedic sensibilities probably don't resonate quite the same way today as they did many years ago. Mm-hmm. And so getting some other comedic points of view in the writing situation to come up with things that are satirical and funny that say something about our modern world, but do it by using history as kind of the vehicle. I think that's a really good move.
I do too. You know, I wonder if it will be similar at all to Drunk History.
I suspect it'll be different enough where, you know, I think it's probably going to have a lot of the same sort of zaniness of the original. Otherwise, why would you even do it, right? Like, you know, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, we will have to see. Something else that is zany that we just saw, as in like right before we recorded this episode, is the Cowboy Bebop trailer.
Yes, which was it's stuff that was made specifically to promote Cowboy Bebop. It's not taken from an episode of the live action series. And it is stylistic to the extreme.
In such a brilliant way. They use like almost like comic book paneling as transitions, as moving interactive transitions throughout the page. So it's not like you've got a cell and then you move to another cell. It's this divider in what is happening on the screen is being moved by characters to further the plot. It made like every bone in my body happy.
I found myself feeling every year of my age as I was trying to keep up with what was going on because characters could move the bar and thus change what setting another character was in. Like if you were Like one character might be in a setting that's got a red background, another one's in kind of a greenish background. And by pushing or pulling the bar, they can move characters from one set into a different one. So it's like you suddenly were teleported to a totally different environment. And then it gets into an action sequence, which just makes it even more complicated. And it was brilliant, and I loved it. Very creative. It actually reminded me a lot of like the kind of stuff you see in an Edgar Wright movie. Mm-hmm. But I was like, whew, I need to pay attention because this is moving fast.
It was moving fast. I mean, at first I was like, what's happening? What's happening? And then I was like, okay, they're chasing a dude and I'm not going to pay that much attention to it other than they're going through all of these different potential settings to find this dude. I had a thought and it just slipped my mind because I was so invested in the Cowboy Bebop trailer.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to the series. Yeah. And you know, they've really captured the spirit, I think, of the animated series. So I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to seeing more of the live action. It's funny because it's the first thing that I've been really jazzed about watching that wasn't like a Disney Plus, you know, original.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a while. I mean, I still need to watch Midnight Mass all the way through. That's quite good. I just haven't set aside the time to do it.
I'm guessing that's not rated Ariel either.
I haven't gotten far enough for me to say for sure, but it's probably a pretty good bet.
All right. You did watch Masters of the Universe Part 1. So that was recent.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Ooh, Jonathan.
I haven't watched it. But Part 2 is coming out. And yes. Yeah. And well, I mean, I did watch some of Masters of the Universe Part 1. I don't think I got all the way through it. If I did, it's already escaped my memory.
Listen, time is limited and there is so much media coming out and it's not going to stop because IATSE is not going to strike.
At least they came to an agreement. Not now.
Not now. They came to an agreement for now. So we're going to continue to get all of this media. So maybe you and I need to work up a system where like I watch something and you watch something and then we tell the other person whether it's worth watching.
That sounds good. Maybe we do a whole podcast about it.
Divide and conquer. Yeah, that would be a good idea. All right. Anyhow.
For the time being, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about all things DC.
And by all things DC, Jonathan meant some things DC because DC fandom just happened and there's way too much to cover in a single episode.
Yeah, we could have actually done a full episode just about the stuff they announced at DC fandom, but we thought we'd hit some of the highlights that we particularly found interesting. And then after that, we might chat a little bit about some of the other things that were announced and maybe just mention a couple because this was like jam-packed with announcements and trailers and reveals and pretty exciting stuff. Where do you want to start, Ariel?
I think that I want to start with Cobra Kai. No, sorry, Blue Beetle. That's what I want to start with. Okay.
Start with Cobra Kai. That's not a DC thing. Well,
okay, it's casting from Cobra Kai. So at DC Fandom, they released basically a concept image of Blue Beetle.
Yes, and not the Blue Beetle that I'm familiar with because I was reading comics that had Blue Beetle in them in the 90s, which was it was the second Blue Beetle, and this is the third Blue Beetle.
Yes, this Blue Beetle is very like Spider-Man-esque. Mm-hmm. And he is being played by, and I'm so sorry to this actor whose name I know I'm going to not say correctly, but Zolo Maridueña, who is Miguel on Cobra Kai. See, like there was a method to my much madness.
So this be madness, yet there is method in it. That's a different yes. Shakespearean play than Macbeth. But anyway. So yeah, the concept art, it has like, The character has like the mandibles kind of above the shoulders, like mm-hmm. like almost framing the head. And that actually, it took me a second to get used to that because it was so different from the Blue Beetle outfit that I was used to. Also, you know, when I was reading the comics, it was when it was like Justice League International and Justice League Europe were titles, and those were more humorous. Like, it was a little more comedic than what you would typically see. It was a strange phase in comic books. So I associate Blue Beetle and Booster Gold as being this. Yeah, they were sort of these comedic foils. And so it's very, it takes me a big adjustment to look at this and go, right. But that's not always who Blue Beetle is.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting. I'm more familiar with the Booster Gold Blue Beetle as well. When I first looked at the image, I thought the mandibles were wings, actually. So thank you for pointing that out. It is a little creepier now. That being said, the image has this really great, like, future-y, neon-y. I mean, it just actually does have a very neon aesthetic to it. But it's got this, like, really cool vibe that feels high energy and potentially not super bleak.
You know what it actually kind of reminds me of?
Static Shock?
No. It kind of reminds me of the Flash's outfit in the trailer we got for the Flash film, because there's a sequence where he's stepping forward where the gold in his outfit is almost glowing Tron-like. And it made me think of, like, it was kind of a red and gold version of what we were seeing with the Blue Beetle concept art. So it almost felt like those two outfits were kind of similar in style in that way. The Flash trailer, by the way, it's really more of a teaser than a trailer. Mm-hmm. It's not really a trailer. You get a little bit of sense of what's going on. You get to hear Michael freaking Keaton talk. It's his voice in the background, and you get to see Batman from behind, and you're assuming it's the Michael Keaton Batman. You also get to see a tarp that is over what you assume is the Michael Keaton Batmobile.
Yeah.
But you don't get a whole lot of details other than the fact that obviously time travel / dimension shifting is a thing, which is not a surprise. Yeah. I mean, that was what was being set up the entire time.
Yeah, but, Flashpoint.
Yes. But what did you think of that trailer?
I feel like it didn't give us much. Honestly, it didn't give me as much Michael Keaton as I expected. I do like that at one point in the trailer, you get three versions of Barry Allen standing together. Maybe more. I only saw three. It was quick. It was dark. It was DC dark.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I found strange. Okay, so everyone knows Michael Keaton is in the Flash film. Like, that's not a secret. Why did they not have one last shot where it's the reverse and you see Michael Keaton's face in the Batman cowl? That would drive people over the edge. They would have gone banana for the trailer. And instead you just see him from behind, which, I mean, Batman's cool, but we've got a billion Batmans. And if you're just seeing it from behind, you might be thinking, oh, this is the Ben Affleck Batman.
Or the Robert Pattinson Batman.
Or the Robert Pattinson Batman. Actually, that's another one. That's another trailer they showed off, was the Batman trailer. Yes.
So back to The Flash, you can't end every movie or every movie trailer with Michael Keaton's face, no matter how much you want to. So that's probably why they didn't.
But he's in this one. So.
He is.
I mean, I would end every movie trailer with Michael Keaton in it, even if Michael Keaton weren't in the movie. But he is in this movie.
I'm kind of hoping that Neon Flash and Neon Blue Beetle team up, and then we get a Neon Green. I was going to see Green Goblin, but it would actually be Green Lantern.
Yeah, because Green Goblin's different. Different comic book company.
Different comic book comic, and we know we're not getting that.
Well, and here's the
crossover
thing also, like we needed to see Michael Keaton, Ariel, because he didn't show up in the Spider-Man trailer. We get Doc Ock in the Spider-Man trailer. I wanted Vulture in there too. We don't get Vulture because Michael Keaton Vulture was busy being Batman's.
But listen, we got Vulture in the, I think it was the Venom movie?
Wait, what?
At the end, there was
at the end of Venom, post credits. You mean the second Venom, the Let There Be Carnage one? He gets transported into the universe, the MCU.
I think it was in Venom. Venom.
No, because then Venom would have already been in the MCU. Venom wasn't already in the MCU. Venom wasn't. It's now in the MCU.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, anyhow. Yeah.
By the way, spoilers for Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Sorry, I haven't seen it yet. I can't remember everything.
Ariel, spoilers for you for Venom, Let There Be Carnage. It's a post-credits thing. It's not important for the movie.
Listen, you're gonna make me go to a really dark place, and then I'll be just like Robert Pattinson's
Batman.
Batman, who is not Batman, he's Vengeance.
Yeah, I'm Vengeance. He's doing a bit of a Christian Bale voice for Batman, which is unfortunate. But yeah. That trailer, I think, looks pretty good. It is interesting. They really eased off on the Zodiac creepy Riddler vibe.
I mean, they showed him at one point for certain.
Well, they definitely had some stuff about Riddler, but it didn't have him like. It didn't look the same as that one trailer where he was just pulling the duct tape. Did it?
I mean, he had like the big leather football burn mask thing on.
Oh.
Up on a screen in one section.
Okay. I must have missed that part. I was mostly paying attention to the penguin, the version of the penguin they have in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I know that there was controversy about casting a thin dude and putting him in a fat suit. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, as a plus-sized actress, I'm like, why? There are lots of plus-sized actors and actresses out there. You could have just hired one, but they wanted the name recognition. But that being said, like, the performance in the trailer was like the most intriguing part of the trailer for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing more about it. I will say my wife Rebecca was not impressed by it, but then she's dead inside. So not true, but it was funny. Geez. It was funny, but it's not true. No, she's wonderful. But no, it didn't. Like, I thought it looked neat. She was like, eh. And I think part of it is just, it's kind of like Spider-Man. We've had a lot of Batman movies over the last few decades. And so you kind of get numb to it after a while. One thing we have not had is a movie about Black Adam. But we're getting one. Originally, Black Adam was going to be the villain in Shazam, and then they decided, hey, let's hold off on that. Give Black Adam his own film, so he'll be an anti-hero, and then maybe set that up for a confrontation with Shazam further down the line. And we got a teaser for Black Adam.
Yeah, and my favorite part about it, like, honestly, I'm going to honestly say, like, I barely paid attention to the trailer because they mentioned Hawkman was going to be in it. And then I was just over the moon and I no longer cared about the rest of it. So I was like, we're going to get Hawkman, which means eventually we're going to get Hawk Girl.
I watched it thinking Black Adam's skin looks a lot like Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. But
I'm pretty sure that was like his mummified skin. I bet as he zaps the actual meat off of people's bones that he'll like rehydrate, I guess.
Yeah. Well, he certainly needs some. Oh, good. Tybalt has decided to join the show. Someone's talking outside of our house, which is obviously not allowed.
It's me, Jonathan.
Okay, fine. But yeah, the Black Adam teaser was kind of interesting. It was very short. There's not a whole lot to it. We also got to see some behind the scenes stuff of Shazam for the next film, The Fury of the Gods, with Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu playing villains. We got a mid-season trailer for Doom Patrol, which Ariel rapidly scrubbed through before we started because she hasn't finished
season three yet, the
episodes that already exist in season three. So you didn't want to see the mid season. We also learned it's been renewed for a season four. So Doom Patrol fans, you can rejoice. They showed some stuff off about the Injustice movie. We got to see,
which got super mixed. It's getting a super mixed reception.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
I mean, that's it. Well, it's really dark. And I think people are just tired of dark Superman. Like if the more recent Superman films or the films that have Superman in them had been more the uplifting, inspiring Superman, then maybe people would be more receptive to, all right, well, here's an alternative take where Superman kind of goes off the edge. But we've had a pretty dark and broody Superman for the past few movies. Yeah. So I think people are like, can we stop with the Superman being crazy?
And I'd agree with that because I own both Injustice video games. And the storyline is really interesting, but it is very, very dark. It's exceptionally dark. We also got to see a trailer for Peacemaker, which is also dark, but it looks funny. It looks maybe less gruesome than The Boys, but we'll see.
Yeah, which, I mean, come on, like, that's a low bar. Like, you don't have to do much to be less gruesome than The Boys. If you want to be more that's gruesome true. Than The Boys, you're going to be going through a lot of corn syrup. Yeah. And we also saw Gwendolyn Christie as Lucifer in the upcoming Sandman,
which adaptation. I forgot was a DC property.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we got a concept art for the live action Batgirl movie. So the concept art obviously isn't a live action shot. It looks like a comic book frame, but it tells you that, you know, she's going to have a very classic kind of Batgirl look. She's going to have the cowl and everything and the long red hair.
It still kind of has like that neon-y vibe. So maybe this is the new era they're going into for their superheroes, which as long as it's not monochrome, I'm happy.
Me too. And that, I think, is pretty much what we wanted to say about the stuff that was mentioned at Fandom. There's a lot more. So if you are a big DC fan and somehow you managed to stay mum about the DC Fandom announcements, you should definitely look those up because there's a ton of other stuff. We didn't go into the video games that are announced or any of the comic book stuff, but there's a ton of it. And we just wanted to touch on some of the things that we found pretty interesting.
Yep. And now we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to mash up some DC with some Halloween spooky. Kinda.
So, Ariel, one thing that we got to see that wasn't DC related was we got to see a shot, a behind the scenes shot for Rob Zombie's upcoming Munsters adaptation, film adaptation, where we got to see actors playing Herman, Lily, and Grandpa in their fancy schmancy actor chairs.
Yeah, they look like the characters from the Munsters, and the most interesting thing to me is that Rob Zombie's wife is playing Lily Munster.
That's not interesting to me at all, and I'll tell you why, Ariel. It's because he casts her in everything he does. She ends up playing the lead female role in every movie Rob Zombie does, and
this tells you how much Rob Zombie I've watched.
I'll just tell you this, Ariel. I've seen better actors.
Why, thank you, Jonathan.
But she plays like she's in, she's the one of the main characters in House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. Mm-hmm. And like, I just, you know, I get it, but there's a limit to my forgiveness for nepotism. But anyway.
No, I get that.
We got to see the clip. I'm still curious as to what kind of tone it's going to have because the original Munsters was corny as heck. It was sort of a spoof twist on the sitcoms of the time.
And you're talking about literally Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah, Leave It to Beaver, which is one of the corniest shows that ever existed. So I actually watched some clips from old Munsters episodes because I haven't seen that show since I was a kid. And I watched it. I was like, wow, yeah, laugh track out the wazoo. Lots of corny jokes that aren't really jokes. Like they say something and then there's a big laugh response and you're like, that's not even a joke.
but at the same time, it had a really good message to it, which was, you know, no matter what you like, look like, no matter who you are, you have worth, you know?
Yeah. Actually it had a very progressive approach to that sort of thing. Herman Munster tells his son in an episode, a very loving message about that, about how who you are inside is what matters. And it doesn't, you know, whether you look unusual or, and he even says white, black, or I think green or something like that, it doesn't matter. And like that message was fantastic. Also, I will add that while I personally find it really corny and not particularly entertaining, it was the higher rated show between it and the Addams Family.
I was about to say the same exact thing.
Yeah. I think the Addams Family is the superior show, but it was not the one that won out in the ratings.
It definitely has more of a ongoing following. Addams Family does, but
yeah,
They played at the same time. And I don't know. I found, I like both Addams Family and Munsters because they focus on like more loving families. So like Adam and Morticia Gomez are a very loving parent couple, you know? Same with Lily and Herman Munster. Munsters, I felt, was a little bit happier.
I think also the theme song to Munsters slaps.
Yeah, it does.
It's one of my favorite TV theme songs of all time. So we have decided to mash up Munsters. We decided to go with DC because DC had so many announcements. And originally I said Batman, but Ariel thought I said Superman. So we went with Superman. And I'm glad we did because mine is short and stupid.
Awesome. I am really afraid that we have the same exact title this time.
What's yours?
Superman.
No, mine is Super Eddie.
Oh.
So who do you want to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So yes, Superman, because, you know, Herman Munster is the dad. They all moved from Transylvania to Mockingbird Lane. We didn't cover that, but that's the story, is this monster family, Frankenstein, the Frankenstein's monster, the Bride of Frankenstein, their werewolf son and their Dracula grandpa moved to Mockingbird Lane. And then they have a niece who is a normal looking person who they think is an ugly duckling, even though we would think she's very beautiful because she's not a monster. Okay. So that's the Munsters. Okay. Herman Munster was your stereotypical retro family man, caring, tall, bolts coming out of his neck, who lived with his family in a lovely Gothic house on 1313 Mockingbird Lane. One day, while he was working at Gateman, Goodbury & Graves, which was a mortuary company, he fell into an open plot and into an open casket. But this casket was like none he had ever seen before. For one thing, it went on forever, and it was super spacious with like crystals and weird panels and this weird S symbol everywhere. Herman didn't know why, but when he looked at the symbol, it made him feel hopeful. And as he felt that hope, he leaned back on one of the panels, and that's when he felt a sharp pain in his posterior as the panel injected him in the rear with something and he passed out. When Herman awoke, he was back in the cemetery of Gateman, Goodbury, and Graves. He explained what happened to his co-workers, but no one believed him. So Herman was sent home to his lovely wife, Lily, and the rest. At dinner that night, Herman started feeling feverish, and when he said the turkey was cold, his eyes flared up and shot lasers out and heated the turkey up. Herman had a lot of powers, like he was super strong and immovable and stuff, but this had never happened before, so the family called for the doctor. Upon examination, the doctor stated that Herman's blood was a bit more radioactive than normal, and he ought to take a couple aspirin and call the doctor again in the morning if things didn't get better. That night, when Herman and his wife were sound asleep in bed, Herman heard a cry for help. When he went to explore the noise, he realized that he was super fast and could fly, and that was also new. He rushed to the cry, and it was his niece Marilyn who was being robbed. Herman at first was surprised that anyone would be mean enough to prey on someone who looked so undeniably plain as his niece, but she was family and he loved her no matter what. So he rescued her. It was a rush like Herman Munster had never felt before. Literally. He had always been super strong, but dude was slow. I mean, he was Frankenstein's monsters. Have you seen his feet? He made Marilyn promise not to tell anyone about his new changes. He bought a disguise, and at night, when his family was asleep, he went about town as Superman. It lasted about a week before he was sat down by his family when he came home late one night to confront him about his new powers. You see, Marilyn had told Eddie told Grandpa, and Grandpa had told Herman's wife, Lily, and now they were all mad at him. Herman explained that he was a superhero now and helping helpless people at night, and the family said that he could not do that without them. They strapped Herman down, and Grandpa sampled Herman's blood, and they all got injected with some sort of super serum made from it, and that's how the Munsters became superheroes. Superman, the Bride of Superman, a.k.a. Lily Lane, Grandpa Bat-Sam, Eddie the Beast Boy, and Marilyn was control because she was Marilyn. The neighbors never suspected anything, though, because, well, the Munsters were a family of monsters and were so weird anyhow. How could the neighbors tell any difference? The end.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So ours are not completely similar, which is good. Mine is called Super Eddie, and it goes like this. Jor-El has a problem. His home planet of Krypton is on a collision course with its own sun as the sun was collapsing. Or maybe Krypton became unstable due to uranium in the planet core. Or maybe there was a colossal war that scarred the planet beyond the point of no return. Whatever, doesn't matter. Jor-El and his wife Lara rush to send their only son, Kal-El, off-planet in a special rocket ship. And so the infant Kal-El escapes the destruction of his home planet and travels across the galaxy. We cut to Mockingbird Heights, an idyllic town that happens to be the home of the Munsters. There's Herman and Lily, a loving couple who have been together since the late 1800s. There's the irascible grandpa, and there's Herman and Lily's niece, Marilyn. They're your average American family, though Herman is essentially Frankenstein's monster, Lily is a vampish woman, grandpa is an outright vampire, and Marilyn is... well, the Munsters love Marilyn. Herman is driving back home after a long day of work at the Undertaker's office when all of a sudden, this shooting star plummets out of the sky and right onto the hood of his car. The Munster coach takes a lickin' and keeps on revvin', as it were, but Herman gets out, and to his astonishment, he discovers that inside the rocket is a baby. Well, he and Lily had wanted a child of their own, but so far had not been so fortunate, and so he decides to bring the space baby back to the Munster house at 1313 Mockingbird Lane. Lily immediately is enchanted by the baby. Even Grandpa is taken by the little tyke, and we fade out to see a title card that reads, 8 years later. The young Kal-El, now named Eddie, fits right in with the Munsters at home. Like his parents, he values family and hard work, and like Herman, he does his best not to judge people on how they look, but by what's inside. Of course, it takes him a while to realize that Herman didn't mean that literally. So for a while, Eddie was going around peeping at people's guts with his X-ray vision, but soon he gets the hang of it. Like his dad, Eddie is really strong. He's also really fast. Also, he can fly, which even Grandpa has trouble doing these days. He's a pretty remarkable guy from a pretty remarkable family. And while he does get into the occasional misadventure, he always learns a valuable lesson. And he also becomes really helpful. His cousin Marilyn helps him a lot because, well, he looks kind of like her, you know. Kind of funny. I mean, he doesn't have pointed ears or fangs. His skin isn't green or alabaster white. He doesn't have bolts sticking out of his neck. He feels like a bit of a monster, to tell you the truth, but Marilyn, who also is an ugly duckling in the family, helps him accept who he is. We fade out and get another title card. 15 years later. Eddie is all grown up and has learned a lot about himself. Like, he's not just fast, he's super fast. He's not just strong, he's super strong. And he has the ability to help people. More importantly, he feels obligated to help people. After all, his own parents helped him. They explained where he came from years before and stressed that they love him just as they would if he had been their natural born child. He takes a job with the Mockingbird Heights newspaper as a local reporter, but that's really a cover story. What he's really up to is protecting the citizens from criminals and calamities, but he has to do it in secret because he doesn't want his family bothered by reporters or soldiers or the police, so he's decided to adopt a superhero persona. But what should that be? Ultimately, he decides he wants to honor his grandpa. Sure, grandpa is a bit eccentric. Sure, he occasionally laments the fact that he's not allowed to go on rampages anymore, but his heart's in the right place. Probably. It's kind of hard to say, because sometimes Grandpa likes to move his heart around just in case someone's got a stake nearby. It's just a smart idea. And so Eddie, formerly Kal-El, decides to adopt a costume that honors his grandpa. He dresses as a big old bat. A bat that flies around and fights crime. Yep, he uses the name Super Bat. Over the years, Super Bat helps the citizens of Mockingbird Heights in numerous ways, and he always does so by following the sweet guidance of his loving family. The end. You know, because we were going to do Batman.
Was it Batman? I'm not for sure you said Superman.
You go back and look at that conversation when I first suggested DC and Munsters. No, okay. But here's the thing, is that as I was like sitting down to write this, And I sat there and I thought about the character of the Munsters and the way their personas come across in the show. The conclusion I came to is that the Munsters family is like Ma and Pa Kent in the classic Superman stories, in that they would instill those values. Like, yeah, they're weird characters and they, you know, they don't see monsters as being monstrous, but otherwise they have those kind of pure, sweet values at the core of them, the same as Ma and Pa Kent. So that, in my opinion, Superman would essentially turn out to be kind of Superman, like the way we think of him in the classic sense, not the dark brooding Superman that we've been saddled with for the last like couple of decades, but you get what I mean.
Yeah. That was surprisingly uplifting, I feel.
No one died. I didn't kill anybody in this one. I mean, Eddie doesn't exist in this version, but
I mean, but he does.
Kinda.
Well, even though you're kind of sticking it to me for my poor recollection, I really liked your mashup, Jonathan.
Thank you. No, I was being silly about it. Actually, I think Superman was a better option than Batman, because Batman would have... One of the things is that, a peek behind the curtain, folks, is that when we sit there and think about things to mash up, we really are trying to look for stuff that is different enough from each other that, you know, it's not like... It's not like a mashup is just going to feel like the same thing as the two things we took. And so it took us a while to figure this one out. And we decided to go with something with DC because of Fandome and the Munsters because of the Munster reveal. And that could have, I mean, I think if we had gone with Batman, it probably would have been less interesting. So I'm glad we went with Superman.
Well, you know, I think we're all winners here. We'll be even more winners if anybody listening has their own version of a mashup with the Munsters and Superman, Batman, Aqualad, really anybody.
Crypto.
Yeah.
If you have your own mashup, send it to us.
Oh,
that works. Send your mashup our way. The best way to do that would be on email. And our email address is lnc@iheartmedia.com. But if you want to just get in touch and tell us what you think of the show, or maybe you've got suggestions for future mashups, anything like that, and you just want to say hi, you can do so on social media. On Twitter, we are LNC_podcast, and on Facebook and Instagram, we are Large Nerdron Collider.
Yes, we would love to hear from you. Make sure to tell your friends and family and loved ones. If you like the show, like, share our episodes, leave a review. All of that's really helpful for us to grow our very large geeky family. That's it.
And until next time, I have been Jonathan Grandpa Strickland.
And I have been Ariel Flappity Flap Caston.
Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Caston. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.